looking at his brand new book, U-Boat, and number 15 in the series, Remarkable Stories of Remarkable Men on Both Sides of the Aisle, so to speak. So onward, let's go to the pictures. If you're new to this hour or new to the program, go to guests, top of the left page, you'll see it at rents.com, and click on tonight's guests, and you'll go right to the pictures. We are at picture number 9.
Nope, 7.
Sorry.
7. Yeah, that pertains to chapter 2. Chapter 1 is about the United States Navy Armed Guard. Chapter 2 is titled Life in the U-Boats by Jürgen Osten, who was a very successful skipper. He won the Knight's Cross, as you can see by the picture. Mm-hmm. And he commanded several different boats. One was a Type 2, one was a Type 9, and the other was a Type 9 D2. One time, after the war, he was in a British naval officer's mess, and there was a young lieutenant commander, and they talked of the war, and the young lieutenant commander, the Brit, said, "Oh, yes, I was a midshipman on HMS Malaya during the war, and we took a torpedo somewhere in the South Atlantic. We went to New York for 3 months for refit and had the time of our lives. The food on board the ship wasn't that good, but ashore from the U.S., the food was great." He said, for the 3 months, things were not at all bad. But during our stay in New York, unfortunately, it was only 3 months, and we had a great time. Uh-huh. And Jürgen Osten said, "I'm the guy that put the torpedo into your battleship." And another time, you look at photo number 8.
So this was a big boat.
Oh, yeah, he torpedoed a battleship, and, of course, it didn't sink it, but it damaged it mm-hmm. enough to lay it up in New York for 3 months, and this British junior officer at the time said they had great food in New York, and he was really thankful for that German U-boat skipper that put the torpedo into his boat and gave him 3 months of good time in New York.
It was a British battleship.
Right, an older one. Mm-hmm. And Osten told him that was him. And photo number 8, that's Harold McCormick. He was a gunnery officer on a Liberty ship, the William Gaston. And they were in the South Atlantic in the middle of a heavy storm. And they got torpedoed and sunk. And thank God he and the rest of the guy made it for a few days at sea and got picked up, and he looked to see who sank him, and it turned out it was Jürgen Osten. And he dug in the files and everything, and he found out who it was, and he went over to Germany, him and his wife, and they met Osten and his wife, and they all became best buddies.
Yeah.
And when we had our convention uh-huh. in Chicago uh-huh. Many moons ago, many warriors showed up. Osten was there, and so was McCormick. And the guys that, you know, were sinking one another decades before got into a bit of a drinking contest, I guess, and Osten was the winner. They had to carry Hal McCormick out of the dining room.
Oh, funny.
But yesterday's enemies are today's friends.
Yeah.
That's what it works. Chapter 3 is...
Have you ever given thought to another big get-together like that? It's probably too late. Most of the men are gone now. But
we are having our patrols, as Hans-Georg Hess referred to them. We're going back mm-hmm. to Germany, but none of the veterans are left. Mm-hmm. And the few that are way into their late 90s, and they're not coming out. So we're going to the various places where these... where history was made over there. We go to Nuremberg, to the party rally grounds, and everybody can go to the big st- stadium at Zeppelinfeld where all the speeches were made, but we go inside that thing. It's open to nobody. It says Eingang verboten, which means shark hunters are welcome here. So we get a tour in there. Offices are in there. The Hitler's former office is there. We go all through that, and we go into the underground bunkers and air raid shelters. Again, open to nobody else. There's a cabinet on the street, like a utilities cabinet for the street maintenance.
Sure.
And it peeled back the corner of a picture of Elvis, and there's a keyhole. And our friend Michael, excuse me, has a key because he's the assistant to the mayor. And it doesn't look like anything at all. You open this thing up, it's a door. We go in and down into the bunkers underneath. We go into Austria and go into Hangar 7, which is where there are quite a few old warbirds in there. A Navy Corsair, an Army Air Corps B-25 bomber, there's a P-38, and they fly these things. Last time we were there, we were inside the hangar. It's really beautiful in there. And
you've shown us pictures. We've done many programs and shown pictures of this. And it is an extraordinary display. Look.
Yeah, and it's all paid for by Red Bull, which is a company out of Salzburg, Austria. I thought it was American, but it's not. It's Austrian. And
have you ever drank one of those?
No, never have. I don't know
I swear I'd have a heart attack. That looks like too much.
Oh, okay. Well,
energy, you know? Boom, boom, caffeine, boom.
I don't think I need any boost to my energy. We had, many years ago when I had an honest job, I had a young gal working for me, and she was drinking something called Jolt Cola, which had double the caffeine, double the sugar, because we had a night shift. And I thought, whoa, boy, that's got to jerk your system around. So,
for sure.
Chapter 3 is Riding the Wild Goose, which was one of the top British anti-submarine corvettes. And one of our members was a crewman on the Wild Goose, and he tells all about it, how they hunted submarines. Chapter 4, Aviso Gorilla, goes into the state yacht of Germany and how Hitler never went far to sea in that because he got violently seasick, which means he did not go to Argentina on board a submarine. Then chapter 5.
I'm with him. I can't. I get seasick quick.
To each his own, I guess. I went out for a few hour ride. Well, a group of ours, when we went to South Africa, we went out on a French built Daphne class, which was just like a Type 21. And later on, I went out for a 3-day ride on one of our big boomer boats, USS West Virginia. You don't even know once you get underwater, there's not much rolling and rocking.
Right.
But and I wouldn't mind serving on a submarine in peacetime. But in wartime, no thank you. No thank you. Like you say, if you're running down, now some of these boats are going 500, 600, 700 feet down. And if you get hit there, you don't drown. The increase in pressure is so great. Instantly, you just killed from the pressure. But still, you're dead. Dead is dead.
Got it.
I've never been dead, but I bet I'd hate it. Chapter 5 is U-1407, which later became HMS Meteorite. This was one of the experimental boats that they built to test the Walter hydrogen peroxide propulsion system, and it goes into the details on how it was made, what problems they had, etc., etc., with photos. Chapter 6, an American CO on board a German U-boat. Merchant ship got torpedoed by U-172, and the skipper was taken aboard for questioning, and that's all in that chapter. Incidentally, the skipper of that boat Carl Entenmann was a member of Shark Hunters, and his first watch officer was Hermann Hoffmann, and he was also a member of Shark Hunters.
Entenmann.
Yeah. No, Hermann Hoffmann. Hermann Hoffmann.
No, Entenmann, as in pastries.
No, Emmerman. I'm sorry. Emmerman. Carl Emmerman was the skipper.
Okay.
Not Entenmann.
To be sure.
Yeah.
Entenmann. Yeah. Charlie Entenmann.
Yeah. Nice guy. Nice guy. Sorry,
yes.
He's gone.
Yeah.
And the Royal Norwegian yacht. But then we get into Chapter 8, interview with Gerd Tater. Gerd was a dear friend. He was like an uncle to me. And he was one of the rare guys. He went through Gibraltar twice. First time around, he went through as first officer on a submarine, and the second time as skipper on his own submarine. And he goes into that, and he sank a destroyer, and he tells all about that. He tells how he got Hans-Georg Hess moving up the ladder from a common seaman to a petty officer to his first watch officer, and then Hess went on to have his own submarine. And he was with us at our first German convention, 1988, in Hamburg.
Mm-hmm.
And you see in photo number 11, that's him in the middle. Those are three U-boat skippers that came to our convention. Günter Grau on the left, my friend Gerd Tater in the center, and on the right, the legendary skipper Ali Kramer, Knight's Cross winner. And they said in the U-boats, it's better to have Kramer as your skipper than to have life insurance.
Wow.
Yeah, and he was quite a guy. And look in photo 12.
Do we want to discuss 9?
Okay. I wondered if you wanted to. We'll go back
and talk about 9. I definitely want to discuss 9.
Okay.
That man deserves it.
Yeah.
Fritz Steinhoff.
And one of our members, Paul Lawton, who's an attorney in Massachusetts somewhere, he did some incredible digging into this. Steinhoff, that's Fritz Steinhoff, was commander of 873, I believe it was. And the war was over. He surrendered like the other German subs. And he was closest to the U.S. coast, so he came in and surrendered at Portsmouth. And for whatever reason, he was taken to the jail. I think it was Charles Street Jail, but I'm not positive. I'd have to dig out the book again. And he was interrogated. Uh-huh. He was tied to a chair, and he was beaten all night long. Another one of our members, Johann Heinrich Fehler, commander of U-234, the one that had the uranium on board, etc., he was in the cell next to him, and the cells apparently were divided by brick walls with only the bars in the front. And he told me in a letter that he couldn't sleep all night from the sounds of the beating of Steinhoff.
Fritz Steinhoff.
He was beaten all night long. It was finally, come morning, he was dead. And they released the official cause of death. They said that he smashed his eyeglasses and slashed his wrist with the broken glass. Well, that's baloney, because first off, there was an ear witness, if you want to call him that, Captain Fehler, heard this beating all night long. Paul Lawton dug into it and got a tremendous amount of background. Mm-hmm. And if you wore eyeglasses, you weren't a U-boat skipper. You had to have great vision.
It's all lies. Come on. I know it. Here, this man deserves to be recognized and honored. I don't care what military, what Navy he was in. You don't do that after the war ends. He took his boat in. He surrendered it under all protocols. He was deserving of all protection. And were these local cops that did this? Do we know, or were they government?
FBI.
Federal government. FBI?
FBI, allegedly.
Sons of bitches. Well, yeah. It's just despicable.
They don't know why, but they suppose because Fritz Steinhoff's brother, I can't remember his first name, he was one of the scientists at Peenemunde, and it's thought that maybe the interrogators were trying to get Steinhoff to talk about whatever secrets his brother knew, but he apparently didn't know the secrets, either that or he...
Well, that's really a good way to get people to talk, isn't it? Beat them to death? Son
yeah.
of a bitch. This is just disgusting.
Yeah, when they're dead, they don't talk much.
Here's the other side of that coin, Harry. Mm-hmm. We brought Operation Paperclip over here. That's inclusive. I don't know how many. There were over 1,000 German scientists, engineers, technicians, largely from Peenemunde, but other locations as well.
Right.
We brought over Wernher von Braun, who was not number one at Peenemunde. He was the second at Peenemunde. All right. Dr. Kurt Debus was the director of the German government's rocket program, Hitler's rocket program, if you will, at Peenemunde. Kurt Debus came over here. Who was the first director of NASA? Dr. Kurt Debus, from 1962 to 1973. It was all German. Wernher von Braun was his number one. Von Braun got all the media attention with the old Disney programs and stuff. It was all German. It wasn't American. So this is all disgusting, and Americans don't know it. You ask anybody. Who was the first director of NASA? I don't know. How long was that person a director? From 1962 to 73. Really? Who was it?
Yeah.
Hitler's director of rocketry at Peenemunde. They won't believe you.
No, no. The average college student today, they ran a thing on Fox News. They were interviewing some of these people they'd stop on the street, young people. What was the War of Independence about? They had no clue.
They don't know.
And they'd ask other questions.
It's done. Harry, it's done. There's no rehabilitation. It's done.
Yeah,
they're finished.
I'm not ready
mentally,
to throw
they're
in
finished.
The towel.
They stare at their screens, and they think they're being informed. They're not. They're being programmed.
Well, that's true. And I was really taken aback again here at Wally World. We're there, and my daughter, who's an incredibly bright young lady, she was buying stuff. She picked the item up, scanned it with her own damn phone, 3, 4, 5 items, brought them up front and showed the phone to somebody up there, and they put their tablet up next to my daughter's phone, and the transaction was complete. What the hell? Nobody reached into their pocket and laid out cash.
I can't.
What do you do when, the electrical grid goes down?
Yeah, I know. Well,
but anyhow,
if they were to EMF this country, it would be back in the horse and buggy days of the 1800s, and the cities would be hell holes of horror, guaranteed.
Yeah.
First thing that goes is the power, and then the buildings all fill up with sewage on the first few floors. Forget it. It's over. The cities become.
Look forward to.
Yeah, the cities are finished.
Nice thing about being such an old fart. If that happened, I could go in and restructure companies real fast back onto the paper way, like we did when I was a young upcoming executive. Everything was on paper. You didn't have computers.
But I don't even have ballots on paper very often anymore. It's all corrupt.
Tell me about it.
All right. Well, I'm glad you got the picture up there of
Fritz Steinhoff.
Captain Steinhoff brought his boat in. Wonder what happened to his boat. Broken up for scrap, probably.
Yeah, they broke him up, or they took him out. November of 1947 was the deadline. They had to dispose
practice.
Of him one way or another, so they take him out and use him for torpedo targets.
Should have kept all of them, every one of them. They'd be worth a fortune now.
Yeah,
it's history.
I thought so too. But unfortunately, these things cost money to maintain if you put them into a park, and there were about in the area of 300 U-boats that were surrendered, and another 300 that were scuttled by their own crews against order. Those were all razed and broken up for scrap, except for U-2540, which is now a memorial in Bremerhaven, Germany.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's quite a tour. I took that tour. Did you look at the video I sent you of the Obersalzberg?
Yeah, I skimmed through it, and I'll...
Oh, you gotta look at the whole thing.
Because I was getting ready to leave for Wally World with my family. So I've still got it on my...
Please look at it. It's very well done.
Yours and 250 others. But, yes, I'm going to take a look at it tomorrow.
It's excellent.
And tomorrow I was hoping to be at my desk the whole day from 4 in the morning, et cetera. But, no, we got to go pick up Kay's car from the shop because it had a thermostat go bad. Then we got to go pick up Asha from the... from the dog kennel, so I'll be working late again.
All right. Okay, number 12. This is an interesting picture.
Yeah, Gerd Tater.
No break, Todd. We're going to go right through the break. Thank you.
Gerd Tater's last boat was a Type 21, and in 1988, when our first group was over there, our first patrol, we heard there were three Type 21s still in an abandoned bunker. And I had asked the director of that shipyard for permission to go there. And I was told not only permission is not granted, but I'd be arrested if I got caught in there. So we got charts and everything, and we got past security, and we got in there. And there were three Type 21s. Scuttled in the bunker, and U-3506, which you can hardly see, that was Gerd Tater's boat. It was fully armed and fully fueled and ready to go out on patrol when the war ended. And so he and Ali Kramer formed an anti-tank battalion in the closing weeks of the war, and then they formed a bodyguard battalion for Admiral Dönitz, who became the head of Germany after Hitler's alleged suicide, which was not a suicide at all. He left town. But now this bunker has been filled in and paved over. It's now a container port.
Between the two hulls of the boats? Is that concrete or just water? What am I looking at?
That's water, and you get the reflection of the roof in there.
I see. Well, they ought to be taken out.
Can't do it now. It's all filled in with sand and paved over. There's also a cruiser up in Kiel, and I think it's the Admiral Hipper, that had rolled over in its bunker, and so they just filled it in, too, and paved over it.
Get it out. History. Yeah. It's like pulling up the Titanic. Get it. That's what I would do. Now, I also went through an incredible story of how they finally sunk the Tirpitz. And what a story that was. Jeez.
One of our members was an officer on board the Tirpitz, and he told us his information, and that's in another one of our books.
It took 1,000-pound bombs to finally take that ship out. 1,000
It's a battleship. What do you expect? They're like 16 inches thick steel.
Yeah. Quite an amazing story, all of it. Okay, so those boats are under there. You took that picture?
Yeah. We actually took film in there, too. I've been in there several times before they filled it in.
Now, when you say fill it in, is it filled in between the hulls of the boats?
Everything. Totally filled in, leveled, and then paved over. The boats are still there, but they're filled in. And with the cruiser up in Kiel, there's a huge amount of void in there because the interior of these submarines and that cruiser is still empty. It's still a void. But what's going to happen when these things finally rust through and the ground starts to collapse into the voids? It's not going to be pleasant for those people upstairs because the whole works is going to collapse.
Well, okay. This is all covered in Harry's new book, volume 15, U-Boat.
Right.
Okay, picture number 13.
13. This is my friend Garrett again and his wife Keela. We were in Chicago in 1994, the 40th anniversary of the capture of U-505, and they had a huge, big celebration, Veterans Day or something like the, one of those. No, it's in July when the U-505
was captured. Capture of 505?
Yes.
It surrendered.
No, it didn't.
Didn't it?
No, U-505
was captured. Well, that was the first one they captured. That's right.
Right, on 4th of June, 1944. So anyhow, they had a big display out on Lake Michigan with Navy ships and planes and everything, and they had a huge section roped off, and it said, for veterans and family only. So Garrett was looking a little lost. They said, hey, you're a veteran of World War II. Go sit down in there. So he struck up a conversation with the American veteran next to him, and his English was perfect. He was a naval attaché to Canada and for quite some years. And they were talking, and what did you do in the war? What did you do, et cetera, et cetera? And Garrett says, I was a submarine commander. And the guy says, what submarine? He says, U-466. And the guy says, that doesn't sound like an American submarine. And he says, it's not. It was a German submarine. And I wish I'd had a camera to take a picture of the look on that guy's face when he realized he was sitting next to a Nazi. And the guy got up and left.
Oh, what an
ass.
Oh,
well. Yeah, he was programmed.
Yeah, of course. I don't hold these people accountable. They are literally that, programmed. Look at Cooper. Look at you.
What?
Look at you.
Am I programmed?
Young, sleek.
Well, back then, 1994.
That's 30 years ago. That's when I started this program.
Oh, okay.
30 years next June. We start our 30th year of service next June.
Wow. Well, Shark Hunters is older than that. I started in February of 83, but I started broadcasting with you February of 2013.
Mm-hmm. Coming up on 10.
Yep.
Wish it had been 10 more before that. But,
yeah, well, you try to stay living and keep your show going. I'll be alive.
I'll be here.
Okay. So we're in business.
Yes, sir.
So anyhow, that was, and Gara is now gone, and Gila, she's a sweetheart, made great tea, and I was in their house I don't know how many times. Mm-hmm. So then we have, let's see, Chapter 9 is 6 days aboard a German U-boat. One of our guys, Frank McClatchy, was put on board a German U-boat after it surrendered to command it on its way back in. Number 10 was the greatest patrol of USS Barb. That was under our friend Gene Flucky. Then Chapter 11 is interesting. World War One. Right after World War One, there was an American submarine out at sea off of Pearl Harbor. He was quite a ways out. And they ran out of diesel or something, and they said, what are you going to do? And their radio was bad. You know, this was 1920-something. What shortwave radio? And so they took a bunch of mattress covers and rigged them together as a sail. And they sailed that submarine back to Pearl Harbor. And it's written by the son of the skipper of that submarine.
Great. A good story.
Yeah. And let's see.
If you all want to see and relive this, it was a movie, but see Das Boot.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
That was absolutely as real as it could get.
Yeah, it was a great movie. And Jürgen Prochnow was a great actor in it. And I can't even remember the name of the guy that wrote the Buchheim. Buchheim. Oh, the U-boaters all. When I went over there in 1988, the book had just come out, and his second book had just come out, and all the U-boat guys grudgingly admitted that it was a great movie, but they hated Buchheim because
he was a producer, wasn't he?
Yeah, he did everything with it. He made a fortune. But he, he also was a photojournalist during the war, and he kept some 5,000 photos, which he parlayed into a lot of money, too. But his second book, which never made it big over here, the title was something about we're winning until they kill us, was a slap in the face against Admiral Dönitz. And you don't do that if you expect to be friends with the U-boaters. So then,
for those of you who don't know and you're thinking about this might be an interesting organization to join, we presented the whole story, not the whole story by any means, but the whole larger story of what happened to Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun and all the rest of them who survived after the war, how they got out, where they went. Harry knows the story, and we know where they lived. And that particular location was in Patagonia on an inlet off of an enormous lake way in the south. We've told the story over and over again. Harry went there first in 2008,
yep.
I believe, and somehow managed to stumble through the locked front door and get in and took pictures of the furnishings, which were the original furnishings, still there. And we decided at that point that something had to be done to preserve all of that, or it would have been looted and or destroyed.
Oh, yeah.
And we're happy to report that it has all essentially been preserved and is safe. So
yep. That
was a remarkable thing.
We're there I've been back there a total of 11 times I've been there, and I'm taking a group there again in 2023. We're putting our ducks in a row. We weren't able to go anywhere for a couple of years with this Kung Flu virus crap, which
was
real, but, you know, because I almost died from it, you know, this past January. But the story about somebody eating bat soup in a wet market.
No.
BS.
No, you wouldn't have died from the Kung Flu. You would have died from the Remdesivir, and I made an enemy of myself by insisting that they do not even think about going near you with that shit.
I still remember laying there half unconscious on the gurney and you screaming and yelling at the nurse. Oh, yes, sir. Okay, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Harry, they would have killed you. That's how they did it. That was
the
death remedy for most people. It wasn't the virus.
Yeah, fortunately, you lit that nurse up, and I'm still here. I'm still, unfortunately, I gained back the 20 pounds I lost, but I got my health back, thank God. I'm just still going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't let anything happen to you.
No, I appreciate that, really.
Yeah, I know. Okay, let's move ahead here.
Yeah, because we want to spend a good 5 minutes on the last piece.
I do.
Number 14.
That's where I want to get there. Yeah,
14. One of the finest men I have ever met in my life, Otto Kretschmer. You know, so many people in these idiot internet sites and these Johnny-come-lately books, you know, they talk about how wonderful the happy time was in this chapter.
Yeah.
Chapter 12, Otto Kretschmer tells you what he and the U-boaters really thought about the so-called happy time, which was basically a buzz term come up with by the PK, the propaganda company. So Kretschmer talks about that. He also talks about why he does not wear a white cap. And this guy was honorable to the max. He sank more ships than anybody else, and this was all done before the U.S. even got into the war. He got knocked out in 1941 before the U.S. got into the war. One of his victims, targets, whatever you want to call, was a cargo ship to the west of France, and he surfaced and forced the merchant ship to stop, and he told the merchant skipper that he was going to sink the ship and to get everybody off into the lifeboats. Weren't these guys supposed to massacre everybody?
Those That's evil, what we were told. Evil yeah. Nazis. Yeah.
So he saw so many women and children getting into the lifeboats. He radioed back to the skipper, the merchant skipper. He said, get everybody back aboard. You're now a prize of war. And he gave him the directions to steer to get into Lorient. And he said, when you get there, you tell the harbor master that you are the prize of U-boat 99. And he said, I will follow you submerged. And if you change your direction, I'll torpedo you without warning. So the merchant ship started going towards Lorient. Kretschmer started following him and dived. And the merchant skipper apparently didn't know that he's making 11 knots and a submarine underwater. And it can't make that kind of speed. So Kretschmer just went underwater and then turned and went back on patrol. And this guy went in to surrender at Lorient. He was a very decent guy. And I got to say, with some incredible pride, one time I was at his house again. I had a sleeping room in his house. And we were having breakfast on the patio, and we had finished, and there was a round table. Otto was sitting on one side. I was sitting across from him. Otto was reading his newspaper. Mrs. Kretschmer, Dr. Kretschmer, was in a lounge chair doing a puzzle in a newspaper about American TV doctors, and I was helping her. And their little schnauzer named Yuli came in and laid down right on my feet. And Otto looked over his newspaper, and he said, Yuli is content. My family is complete. Boy, if you don't think that was an incredible moment. The greatest submarine commander of the war. And
unreal. Well, congratulations, yeah. Harry. That's
he was,
a wonderful
He was a
memory.
Great man. And sadly, the way he died, 1998, slipped and fell down the stairs on a cruise boat in the Donau River, the Danube, cracked his head, and that was it. I'm sorry, but this interview we did with him, which is recapped in the book here, mm-hmm. in this chapter, he was just telling some of these stories, and he was damn near convulsed with laughter, some of these things. When he finally got sunk, when HMS Walker sank him, and he got on the Morse lamp, and this was back still when there was chivalry, and all his men were in the water. Wegg messaged to the destroyer. He said, Captain to Captain, please help my men in the water. I am sunking. And, because he had spent a year at Oxford. But the young guy was flapping the lamp as Kretschmer was giving him the letters to send. He screwed up. So anyhow, they got Kretschmer aboard finally, and Captain McIntyre took his binoculars. The German binoculars were highly prized, and he took them as a prize of war. But later, these guys got together for dinner way after the war, and McIntyre had a little bronze plaque screwed to this binoculars, and it said, to a gallant foe and a good friend. And he gave them back to Kretschmer, and I held those binoculars in my hand.
Wow.
And when they hauled Kretschmer out of the water, he was so exhausted because when his boat went down out from under him, he was wearing his leathers, sea boots and all that, so he had to swim 100 yards wearing all that, and he just barely made it to the scramble nets. They hauled him up, put him on the deck, and he passed out. So they brought him into Captain McIntyre's shore cabin, harbor cabin, and let him sleep. And when he woke up, he said he saw Captain McIntyre sitting on his desk, legs swinging over the side, and McIntyre said, how do you feel? And Otto said, I don't feel very well. I went, hell, he's just been blown out of the water. Damn near drowned, but he and McIntyre got to be buddies.
He saved his crew, too.
Yes, all except there were two guys killed in the initial attack, and the boat was hanging on the surface and wasn't sinking as quickly as it could. Mm-hmm. And so his engineering officer said, I'm going to go down and open the vents. And Kretschmer said, watch it. The boat is just riding on the vents right now. which meant that that's the only thing holding them up was the vents were closed. He said, open the vents slowly. And the engineering officer went down below, and all of a sudden, Kretschmer heard whoosh, and that was it. The boat went down. And Otto, he always believed that the theory or the old wives' story about a sinking ship creating a suction that brings a pulls a man down, he always thought that was not true. So he stood at attention on his bridge when his submarine sank out from under him, and it didn't pull him down. He said, so you see, Harry, I did not desert my submarine. My submarine deserted me. He was a great man. He was a great man. I'm blessed to meet so many of these guys.
Wow.
That's
extraordinary.
You can see the other pictures. Number 15 and number 16 is when I was at his home, and he was explaining tactics, and he was also telling some of these stories to me back then. The guy was so funny. You always see the picture of him, and he always has that so-called Nazi sneer on his face. He wasn't that way at all. He was a fun guy. He used to like to play tricks on Eric Topp, the third most successful skipper, because Topp was pretty much by the book. And Kretschmer used to play jokes on him when they were in the service. And then again, when I knew them both, they were doing that.
These were extraordinary men. And we had some, too. Make no mistake. But honestly, man for man, German for German, these guys were just remarkable.
Yeah. And the Americans I met, too.
Patton knew it. All right.
Oh, yeah.
He's not saying they were better than we were. He gave them their just.
They were good, great people.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and others like Flucky. I met Gene Flucky. He was a guest in my home. Another great man.
Okay.
And a character, too.
Number 17?
Yep, that's Gene Flucky.
Okay.
And you'll notice the arrow pointing to his ribbon that shows he has the Medal of Honor, not the Congressional Medal. Boy, he jumped on me when I said something about Congress has nothing to do with that, he yelled at me. It's the Medal of Honor. Okay, sorry. Most highly decorated American submariner ever in history, Medal of Honor, four Navy crosses. You add up all the medals that all the men on his boat won, and it's the most highly decorated boat in American history, and he said he was always proud that none of his men earned the medal that he held in highest esteem, the Purple Heart. He always brought his guys back alive and in one piece.
Well, that's another great story. All right, I want to do this. I think we should put the USS Barb off until next meeting. I want to go to this medal.
Yes, sir.
I want to spend, we've got 5-6 minutes, and that'll be enough.
Okay.
The Barb is a big story. We're going to do that another time.
Another time, sure.
Go to the last picture, number 19, and look at
this,
that carefully.
This is the most incredible honor I can imagine. I was approached about 2 months ago by one of our members who, I don't know if I should mention his name or not, so I won't. He's head of a group called the Teutonic Treue. Teutonic loyalty. And he sent me an email saying that if I agree, their committee has decided to award me this medal. This is their Knight's Cross first degree with oak leaf. There's only 15 of these in the world, and this is the only one in North America. I remember about 15 or so years ago, my friend Manfred Roeder was so honored, and I am the one who affixed it around his neck. And, never in my wildest imagination. And this is the certificate that comes with it, which hasn't got here from the mail yet, but he sent me a picture. It says, and this was translated by our friend John Derman, "We Germans abroad, by the grace of God, request the military and civil authorities of all states, upon presentation of this certificate of award, to acknowledge Harry Cooper is a worthy bearer of the Order of Teutonic Loyalty This honor was awarded for many years of selfless commitment to the preservation of Germanness and German cultural assets higher than the first class of the Knight's Cross with oak leaves. In order to recognize special achievements, this enables future generations to understand the eternal nature and access a wealth of knowledge so that they too can prove themselves worthy of their ancestors. Signed at Lisbon by the Master of Ceremonies on 3 October 1922, or 2022.
Well, no more richly deserved honor should you receive, and you did. And that is just, that's one of those things that doesn't happen often enough when someone does something like you have for so many years. And
it's incredible.
I'm really happy for you. That's so special. That's wonderful.
I'm still in awe. And it's laying here on my desk right next to the Presidential Medal of Merit that Ronald Reagan gave me many, many years ago.
Kind of just
it makes all the hard work
us.
Worthwhile.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Wow. I was just stunned when you told me about this.
Yeah. You and Megan were the only ones I told. I didn't want to tell anybody else.
Wow. It's beautiful, and it speaks so much. Not about the glories of war or any of that. This is about serving humankind with the truth. And the German people, and they deserved it. They suffered so terribly.
They did.
Remember, Americans didn't suffer. We weren't being bombed over here, for God's sakes. We bombed those poor people for 4 years.
Yeah.
And that lunatic psychopath, Churchill, and his bomber coordinator,
Harris.
That son of a bitch. And what happened after the war? Our future president, Eisenhower, killed how many million? 2 million at least. And then it went on from there.
With his starvation camps.
He's a POS.
Look at the bright side. If you're a good guy and go to heaven, you ain't gonna see him.
I very glad to hear you say that. It's true. It's totally true. Well, our Admiral Cooper got the best recognition that any man could get, and there it is. And you add that to the Reagan honor and. Well, this one is, in my view, this is the ultimate.
Yeah, there's only 15 of these in the world.
In the world, yeah.
So they're very, very careful with who they give this to, apparently.
Well, the nice thing is they watch and they listen to your work. They understand. And they're listening right now. And I want to personally thank all of you out there in this group that made this possible for Harry. It's just wonderful to see.
Yeah. Great honor.
Yeah, yeah. What do you do for an encore?
I don't know, but I still got a lot of years ahead of me. And remember, your listeners, just go to sharkhunters.com, scroll to the bottom where it says Join Shark Hunters, follow the prompts there, and it's only $5 a month.
Or if you want to pay for the whole year, splurge. It's okay.
Yeah.
You give them a discount on a year membership?
No, we're not that big.
Okay. And Harry, by the way, for all of you out there, Harry and his family are not rolling in dough, okay? All the money they earn from this goes right back into the Shark Hunters organization. This is a real sacrifice and he loves it. Of course, he wouldn't have it any other way. And these tours coming up next September?
We're going to Bavaria and Austria.
But once in a lifetime, you'll have an opportunity. Everyone who's ever gone on these things is a changed person for the better. So
yeah, they love
keep
them.
That in mind. And and then what about that other thing I sent you, the video of that location with the enormous underground bunkers and things? Where was that? Did you figure it out?
No, I haven't. I skimmed through it, and I'm not sure. It might be Norway or something like that. That's the one they're going to renovate or something?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I got one last night that showed a whole huge Luftwaffe airfield. It's all green grass now, farmland.
Yeah.
But there are five in a ring all around it, flak batteries. I'll see if I can find that and send that to you. That guy's good, whoever that guy is. He's got a good channel. He looks for a lot of World War II relics that are still there. So he's good. He's good.
Yeah, we go to, on one of our tours that we may repeat again in the future, we went east from Berlin and we went to the Wolfschanze. And most people don't know there was another huge bunker complex just to the north of that that has not been destroyed.
Owl Mountain.
It's what?
Yes? Owl Mountain? What is it? Which one?
Oh, no, no, no. You're thinking of, Eulenburg, Owl Mountain, it's not easy to get in because it's controlled by the military, I'm told.
The Polish.
But then we go from there, or we go further east, and there's all sorts of places. The bunkers are still there. Huge gun emplacements on the Baltic.
Some of them have been forgotten, by the way, and they haven't been entered probably since the war. They're just lost. They're there.
Yeah.
There was so much underground. How much of Berlin was underground?
Oh, God, I'm looking at a chart on my wall here. I've got a big chart that shows where all the bunkers were. And the command bunker of East Germany, the entire governmental, you know, if things went south for them, they had the whole government underground. They had different floors underground. They had rooms and rooms, and everything was on springs. The heavy stuff was on springs on the floor. The other stuff, like freezers in the kitchen and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Other stuff, desks and bunks hanging from springs from the ceiling in case, you know, there was nuclear war and bounced them around. And it's just like it's the way they walked out of there. And we go into that thing, too. Most people can't go into any of these places, but, you know.
Are we going? Are we going?
Means shark hunters welcome.
You bet. Are we going south? Are you going to make it?
Yeah. This September, we're going to Bavaria and Austria, and then we're trying to pick a date to go to Argentina.
I'm talking about, are you going to go to Argentina this winter?
Are we
still trying?
I'm going to go with one other member on a research expedition in March, but I want to try to put together 2 weeks for members also, not the same time, obviously.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we need to raise money for that, so let's work on that.
Yeah.
Next
Maybe
time.
I should open a GoFundMe, but I don't think that works much.
No, the Spitlickers would scream and yell and have it taken down.
Yeah.
We'll do it here.
Much from them.
No, they've got bigger fish to fry, apparently, in their minds. I don't know. It's not a credit to any people or political movement. It's a discredit.
Most people realize that they are
hate
debunked.
They deal with hate. That's what they deal with.
And they're good at it. They've got $700 million in their ready account. And they've got four or five floors full of attorneys.
Right. That's right. That's what I hear. All right. Let's get you down there in March. You need to get to those unexplored areas, if that's possible.
And, like the bunkers and tunnel system underneath the home where Hitler lived from 1945 to 55. And we were going to go there.
That's right.
Senor Torres, your best buddy, was going to clean out all the rat poop so that we could breathe it down there, but then we came with the Kung
Just
flu
take a,
virus.
Take a whole, full head mask. You'll do it. We'll talk. All right. Thank you. Congratulations again on your award. I appreciate it. It's wonderful to see. All right. Good night, Harry.
Good night, guys. Have a great day. Okay. And sharkhunters.com.
All right, very good. Good night. We'll be right back.